Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and today I'm here with a Chicago native, the wine director of the several Michelin-starred L2O restaurant. His name is Richard Hanauer. Richard, great to have you here today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right. Well, welcome. I'm really excited to have you on. We have not had anyone from Chicago, and Chicago is without a doubt one of the hubs of the American food scene. Great restaurants, incredible wine programs, just a huge center for people who are interested not only in wine service but in education. There's a lot of people I know out there who are studying for several wine degrees. So I'm really happy that you're on, and I want you to share with us a little bit about everything that's going on in Chicago. But first, let's get started with let's talk about you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the restaurant industry.
Well, growing up in Chicago, it's impossible to escape great restaurants all your life. If you're willing to leave your house, you're inevitably going to end up going to a multitude of great dining destinations. Like many of my predecessors and many of my successors to come, I left Syracuse University with an English degree. And upon coming back to Chicago, it was really difficult to find some work that was really interesting and fair pay. And I fell back into the service industry and immediately found my calling in life and really loved the passion of taking care of people. And I was really raised with wine being an important part of every dinner. And that started at the house at a very young age. My father built a deep, passionate cellar that he was eager to share with us and eager to educate with us. And without knowing it, I took that already working wine knowledge and got to apply it to my guests at a very early age, very early starts my career, excuse me. And then immediately decided I wanted to take this to the next level and started studying more and working with more mentors and working with many great chefs and humbly very excited to be where I am now in my career and working with Matthew Kirkley at L2O and the beautiful list that we've got going right now. And I couldn't be any happier.
So you're a kid at the dinner table. And your parents are drinking about wine and talking about it, and your dad would slip you a sip? Is that kind of how it happened?
You know, in his defense, I don't know if a sip would be the right word, but it was always always approached from this very educational, passionate background. My mother, and I will say this till my last meal, is the finest cook I'll ever have the pleasure of dining with. And every meal that she made was intricate and well thought out and fresh and, more importantly, delicious. And my father would come home, kind of see what was going on in the kitchen, talk to my mom about it, and he would go downstairs and select a wine. This was a nightly ritual. And the one thing that, looking back, that I really focused on is I never saw my dad drink the same bottle twice. He always wanted to taste something new, and he wanted to share that. And sometimes as a 9-year-old, you're more interested with what your brothers are doing. And sometimes as a 9-year-old, Merlot is going to stick in your head as one of the grapes of Bordeaux. But he was so eager and so passionate to share with us, as was my mom with the flavors. So it's this beautiful marriage at the dinner table, and if I can say beautiful marriage as well, that just gave us, me and all of my brothers, this incredible food and wine background that was just this great foundation for me to build a professional career on.
So you get back to Chicago after college, not thinking that you're going to go into the food and wine industry, but did you kind of just fell into it? Is that correct?
I fell into it. I was searching for a job for 6 months maybe, and then eventually I had to pay rent. And the best job I could get at the time was a lunch server at a steakhouse in the West Loop, very close to our United Center where the Chicago Bulls play, Chicago Blackhawks. And there was I remember putting on the apron and the suspenders and the armbands and the pens and the computer card on an elastic string, and I thought I was going to be really embarrassed. I thought that this was a letdown to me, and until I approached my first table, and nothing could stop the smile that came on my face. I really enjoyed taking care of people, and that would develop into a passion both personally and professionally. And wine really kind of rode the parallel track at the same time. I became just more and more passionate about it. And all I wanted to do was to share my education. My friends weren't terribly interested at the time, but my guests were. And so all of my hours of studying got projected to the tables in the dining room.
So was there a manager or a wine director, a sommelier, who you were talking to, who was working at the restaurant, or was this a lot of just self-study and your experiences based on your childhood?
You know, this actually started, it would be just the opposite. There was a chef at the time, and I was 22 years old, and I was getting into reading my first couple of wine books, and he told me, there's no way you could be a sommelier. At that point, to me, it was, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong. And, it goes back to the family dinner table. When I told my family about my passion, I didn't know it was going to be my career at the time. They said, great, let's do this. It was unlimited access to bottles, unlimited access to wine ordering in dining room tables. If I was going to be interested in wine, my family was going to fully support me. And it was actually at the next restaurant I moved on to, I knew I wanted to, after loving the steakhouse, I wanted to go a little bit further, a little bit finer into dining, and I ended up at a restaurant that's now closed, unfortunately, in 160 Blue, that had a brilliant chef, still a Chicagoan, and Marcel Nouguier. And he was the first one to really show me that fine wine and fine food is a necessity. They really belong together at the highest level, and that there is such a variety of options for guests to enjoy flavor-wise when combining wine into their chosen food menu.
Well, now this is an interesting topic that you've kind of broached here, because I think one of my favorite pairings is the old champagne and fried chicken pairing. So you have kind of, humble food with a very, very high-end wine. What are your thoughts on maybe the opposite? If you have very, very fine food, but a super simple, straightforward wine, you really feel that you have to have the finest together and they need to complement each other on that level?
You know, I think there's a yes and a no there. On a personal note, I have to tell you, I have a horrible fascination with fried chicken. And being a Chicagoan, that is a staple of growing up, especially growing up on the South Side. That was a big part of the diet. And one of the really humbling parts about wines from smaller appellations, lesser-known grapes, and I immediately think to Central Italy. These are wines that aren't terribly luxurious in the glass, and they're very approachable at the price point. And you don't collect these wines. You don't build your cellar upon them. But what they're able to do with food, with a little bit less going on in the glass, sometimes it's a much more natural pairing. There are times when my chef, Matthew Kirkley, will present a dish where the dish has less ingredients and I can do a more complicated wine, and sometimes it's the inverse. Sometimes the food really calls for a wine of simple flavors to make a really pleasurable marriage. And there's nothing like doing a great bottle of wine at a dinner table, especially in a dining room. It feels great. You're excited for it. You're passionate about it. But we can't ever ignore the little guys, the underdogs, the weekday whites, as I like to call them. They're fantastic with the food if you're going to really know exactly the anatomy of the glass and what it's going to offer to the plate on the table.
No, before you got to L2O, I have a note here that you you actually had the opportunity to serve high tea to the Queen of England. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah, that was a fun one. I never saw that coming. My family, my mother, displaying this heightened hospitality. It was no surprise that myself and one of my other brothers, Jeff, actually got into hospitality as well. And he ended up working on a more corporate level and was working down at Churchill Downs. And Churchill Downs is a wonderful racetrack, home to the Kentucky Derby in Louisville, Kentucky. What most people don't know is that this institution of American sports is only open for about 6 weeks a year. And you can imagine the staff, albeit passionate, can't terribly be polished on 6 weeks a year in service experience. And I got a call from one of my brother's partners several years ago, and he said that they had a VIP guest coming down to attend the Kentucky Derby, and would I come, you know, fly down and take care of them? And it was a very shady phone call at the time because they wouldn't say who it was, and I was, you know, scratching my head, and they made a financial offer, and I stopped scratching my head and put a smile on my face and got on the plane. And the day before, they said, "Do you know anything about serving fine tea?" And I had experience with it before, and they said, "Great, Queen of England's coming to the Derby this
wow.
year. You're going to be taking care of her tomorrow." And I honor my guests like nothing else. They are the reason that we go to work every day. It is not a selfish profession. We do this to take care of other people. But to this day, and I've had the pleasure of taking care of lots of celebrities, lots of important people, I will never forget walking into the room she was at Churchill Downs. You, after passing a variety of security clearances, you stepped foot into that room, and it was, without even seeing her, clear there was someone of grand importance in this room. And just being in her proximity, just this reflection of grace and nobility, and she's actually a very sweet, sweet, sweet lady, and just like anyone else, just a real pleasure to take care of. And it was a great experience that I will carry with me for the rest of my life, and just so much fun to serve tea to someone who is so passionate and so well known. But at the end of the day, very gracious and humble guest.
Does she do the old the milk and honey in the tea?
It's funny. She added just a little bit of milk. There was no honey. It was an English Earl Grey. It was served in a traditional English style. And I don't think that my tea skills were up to her palate.
Yeah, I bet she drinks tea from time to time, huh?
She might have had a glass or two in her day. She had one sip, and that was her only sip.
Oh.
It didn't matter to me. I was grinning ear to ear.
Okay, so at the ripe old age of 25, you actually got a job at True Restaurant, which is one of the nation's great wine lists. Tell us a little bit about your time over there.
I remember applying to True, and when I applied, there was no way I could get this job. I didn't know enough. I didn't have enough experience. But with how excited I was about wine, I owed it to myself to apply. I sat down for an interview with a gentleman, Chad Elligood, who was the wine director at the time. Now he is at the Park Hyatt in Chicago, a lifetime mentor, someone that I've already spoken to twice today on the phone, and a dear, dear, dear friend. And I still to this day think that it wasn't the smartest decision to hire me, but after an hour of an interview, he called me back several days later and offered me the position. And he spent the next 3 years kicking me in the shins and really teaching me the fine etiquette of service and a really different way to approach wine. Chad and I worked together for 3 years in a list that was just gorgeous. His ability to procure old bottles and treasured bottles and great flavors. And Jennifer Teets today is doing an incredible job keeping up the momentum he built. I think the list has never been better. But when Chad and I worked together, he gave me this new insight into wine. It's so easy to think of a wine as a sense of place, which it really is. As sommeliers, we love playing the terroir card, that a grape from a region, from a vintage, is going to produce this kind of flavor. And what Chad and I spent so much studying to do was taking wine into the fourth dimension, into the time dimension, seeing how these wines performed over time, seeing the flavors that developed in the bottle, seeing the reliability of the terroir and producing these flavors as they move forward. And that was really the most flattering part from an educational standpoint, was getting to see wine throughout time, and that every vintage was just one mark in time. It's got its place here in the dining room. Some vintages will last for decades, some just for years. Some shouldn't be listed. But that was also while working with two great chefs, Tim Graham and eventually Anthony Martin, who both allowed us to passionately chase down our dreams. Anthony is still there today, and the food is just through the roof and very wine-friendly. And one of the great parts about Truro is it's this great stage of hospitality. It is one of the most beautiful, elegant dining rooms you'll ever be in. But it's not a dark room. Every detail is there. It's in full fruition, and just a great place to go to work. And I started getting offers to leave. You know, once you have Truro Sommelier on your resume, you become a hot commodity, or a hotter commodity, I should say. And I couldn't leave Elligood. It was too educational at the time. We were learning too much and drinking too good of wines. And I knew just by staying and working with him and letting him push me down professionally so I could build myself back up, that was really the best idea for me in the long haul.
So you're saying this was a positive experience. I'm just kidding. Well, speaking about time, we are going to take just a short break. And when we get back, we're going to talk to you about L2O.
Very excited. Thank you.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain, of the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
And we're back with Richard Hanauer, the wine director for L2O Restaurant, Michelin-starred L2O Restaurant in Chicago. And Richard, talk to us a little bit about L2O. You seem to be completely enamored with the cuisine at your restaurant. So talk to us about the cuisine and then how the cuisine informs the wine selections on your list.
So the cuisine is it comes from Chef Matthew Kirkley. Chef is incredibly talented and incredibly dedicated, very creative. But the chef also, what I admire most in him is his dedication to excellence and consistency. A good plate can't start without a great ingredient. He has really revolutionized a way of serving seafood in Chicago, using different purveyors, giving merchants in Lisbon a DHL account. He created his own shellfish tank aquariums, and that's just the beginning. That's just the source of the ingredient. You know, for Chicago to serve local seafood, we would have a 10-course tasting menu based off whitefish from Lake Michigan. And that is not what the restaurant is about. So it really begins with Kirkley sourcing the finest ingredients from all around the world, and that starts in the water. And the same mentality certainly extends to the other ingredients that are part of the dish and part of the menu. Matthew is so humble and would never admit to it, but this dedication to the guest, to delivering them this great plate, is like nothing I've ever seen before. Every chef, I think, that puts out food is going to make something great. You know, these are professional cooks at the highest level. And one of the things that Matthew's really shed a light on to me is it's not about necessarily creating the menu, although his food is just mind-boggling, beautiful to look at, and absolutely delicious. It's about when you're serving that dish 2 weeks later at 9 p.m., does it taste exactly the same? Does it look exactly the same as when he first plated it? And if it doesn't, it won't be served.
So it's so seafood is a big influence in terms of where the protein, but it, with the flavor combinations, how would you describe where the flavors come from? Is it classic French? Is it his own creation?
You know, one of the great things about Chef Kirkley is he's very passionate about French food, but also food from all over the world. I would think there's a little bit more of a base and technique in a French style of cooking. You certainly see some sautéing. You see some dishes that have been inspired by great chefs, both from France and not from France. But that classic French technique does lend itself really beautifully to wine. And the other thing that happens is that the chef will not use ingredients that aren't pristine. Like, we won't serve a wine that's not pristine. So there is this unbridled marriage between his cuisine and the way it works with food. It's really quite fascinating. There's such a trend in dining to be so innovative and so new, and especially in Chicago, and we really like what's new, what's fresh, what's different. And putting 20 ingredients on a plate with a dot of this and a dot of that and a microgreen here and a swoosh there, it'll produce this beautiful plate to look at. And when you take, you know, all these 20 ingredients and you marry them with wine, not always the result you want. And I always say that with a chef, your food is very complicated from a production standpoint, but the flavors are brilliant and true and really end up being just this elegant version of seafood, and I hope wine in Chicago.
Okay, so we have a seafood restaurant in Chicago. So I imagine that you're doing a lot of white wines. Does this true? Does this go throughout the whole Chicago winter? You're having all these white wines.
Well, when I was asked to take over at L2O and to work with Chef Kirkley, we decided, let's do something different. We live in a city known for steakhouses. There is no place better to come enjoy a full-bodied red wine than the city of Chicago. And Matt and I looked at each other and said, you know what, let's roll the dice. Let's build the greatest white wine collection on planet Earth. And obviously we don't have the greatest white wine collection on planet Earth, but every time we procure a bottle, that's our goal, is to really heighten the food's experience. And in the middle of winter when nothing would be harder than a good Cabernet, the sweet nectar of the Napa Valley. The food is not calling for that. Mm-hmm. We are still enjoying pouring Muscadet, Champagne, Burgundy, Sancerre, Rueda. The wines are strictly there to complement the cuisine. I'm very passionate about wine, and there are a plethora of wines I would like on my menu, but I have to hit the brakes. My job is to complement the food. And if I'm not complimenting the food, I'm acting in a way that's not in the guest's best interest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. You know, and as a native New Yorker, I will completely give you the steakhouse nod, but there is no way that you're getting the pizza nod. We have pizza. We rule pizza in New York.
You know, if you like a really light, airy pizza without a depth of flavor, I can appreciate that. But you're certainly welcome to enjoy a real pie anytime you're in Chicago. It'll be my treat.
Other than the pizza and the fried chicken and then the very high end, how else would you characterize what's going on in Chicago in terms of the food scene right now?
You know, Chicago when I was growing up. Was all about, we had three, you know, styles of restaurants. We had the great pizza and steak houses. And then we had really nice restaurants, the Le Francais. We had Charlie Trotter's, which served great food, of course. And then what really is a memory of growing up is the great ethnic foods, trying different nationalities. We're, much like New York, we're a big immigrant city. And that couldn't benefit our cuisine more. And really the big change, I don't know if it was based on multimedia. I think Michelin had a lot to influence it. But instead of restaurants having themes or cuisine types, Chicago is going in this direction of a chef-driven restaurant. And whether or not they want to admit it, the beauty behind it, chefs are very, very competitive. They want to serve the best dinner possible. And this inter-competition couldn't be any more beneficial to the diner. And we're really starting to see restaurants that are passionate about the food that they serve. And then after they focus on the menu, then they design their dining room. Mm-hmm. So the kitschy restaurant is just is gone. What we're seeing is chefs, giving their life to put out the best food possible. And that is not just at the L2Os of the world. That is happening at $30 a plate or all the way up to, a Michelin experience.
Yeah, I know a few folks in the wine scene out there who are doing the Court of Master Sommeliers route. I know you have the advanced level certification. Are you working towards the MS group? Are you currently studying? Do you have a tasting group?
You know, I have a tasting group full of a lot of the other candidates, and I have lots of pupils that are taking the introductory and taking the certified, and I cannot have a better day than when someone passes a test. The Court of Master Sommeliers is one of the greatest things to happen to wine service and wine in the United States. And Chef Kirkley and I sat down about a year ago, and we talked about pursuing the master. And I could do one thing or the other. I could give the restaurant everything I had every waking moment of my professional career, or I could do the same for the test. And because the court deserves the highest respect and the highest honor, I am passionate about taking that test in the future and achieving that pin in the future, and I can't wait. But I couldn't fully focus on that exam and give the court the respect I do while giving the respect of the guests that they deserve and the restaurant they deserve. So it's not that I'm putting my wine education or the court on the back burner. It couldn't be the opposite. For the next several years, I'm going to really focus on the cuisine. And when my time is ready, that I want to take that will be able to work towards the exam, I'm going to be excited for that.
Well, yeah, we have the, you know, there are three parts to the exam. There's the tasting, the service, and that theoretical part. And, you know, you can practice the service every night, right, in the dining room, as I'm sure you do. And you're working on the tasting group. So I imagine when the time's right and you're ready to hit the books, you'll be well prepared. You'll be well on your way.
Thank you. I really do look forward to it. Working, we owe our guests 100% of our time, for the food, for the chef, for the cooks that cook the food, for the dining room, for the managers, for the staff, anything but 100% dedication, I wouldn't be acceptable. And the, court deserves the exact same thing. And as you say, service, thankfully I go out there and I hope I execute a really nice dinner service every night. And tasting, it's always a pleasure, but that theory, that is a tough mountain to climb.
It's no joke.
Without, I think it's a little bit easier to do it after a couple decades of service when you have naturally built up that knowledge. But for the younger candidates that are in their 20s and 30s, it requires a little bit more time studying, which I passionately hope to come in the near future for me, but not too near because we've got a big meal coming up tomorrow night.
All right. Well, Richard, I can't thank you enough for being on In the Drink. It is truly a pleasure and an honor to have someone so accomplished at a young age, but also working hard to bring a high level of service every night to L2O Restaurant, our first Chicago wine director, our first Chicago sommelier. So it's exciting to have you.
It was an absolute pleasure. I just hope I'm not the last, and the next time you're in town, I'm excited to show you a couple different joints.
You know, I'll be out there in June, so I'm going to give you a heads up. I'll see if I think that Grimaldi's pizza travels well. So I'll bring it over for you.
I will meet you at the gate with a 4-pound piping hot Giordano's pie. Very excited.
All right. Thanks again, Richard Hanauer, L2O Restaurant, and you're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.